A Good Enough Timeline, a Stargate Atlantis fanfiction by Tasmi. Rated Teen, Relationship, John Rodney. Read by Tasmi. Despite rumors to the contrary, John did his own paperwork. Mounds and mounds of signing endless documents, which seemed more likely to kill him than a wraith feeding because it was just so damn boring and there was so much of it. Unfortunately, Atlantis' return to Pegasus only seemed to triple the load. With the city now hosting the Aligned Worlds of Pegasus organization, one half of the city consisted of Pegasins, one quarter of Earth military, and one quarter of Earth science personnel. Paperwork now included the usual requisition forms and mission reports, but also all the notes from Ronan's domestic security department and Tayla's alliance division. He smiled for a moment, considering Ronan is essentially the sheriff of Atlantis now, and how well he'd fallen into that role, thoughtfully creating a rough legal structure with Woolsey that worked for Earth and Pegasus civilians, as well as military personnel to deal with kerfluffles, disorderly conduct, and other such trouble bound to happen in the melting pot that was now Atlantis. Tayla also seemed to do well in her new role, though that was perhaps less surprising. As a natural negotiator and leader, she thrived on bringing people together and helping them work through their differences. John didn't envy Tayla's job, though. With so many worlds fighting to attain the largest piece of the pie they could, while also becoming something new within the framework of the Alliance. John yawned, knowing he should go to bed. The heap of paperwork wasn't going to finish tonight, after all. Still, he found himself in no hurry to leave. Somehow, even dull reports seemed preferable to dealing with Rodney back in their quarters. While normally John didn't shy away from Rodney's worst moods, he just couldn't today. He glanced at the date on his computer and then at the picture of Elizabeth on his desk. Just one more hour until the painful anniversary. Whatever project bothered Rodney, or whatever stress overwhelmed John, he knew the real reason behind it all. It had been 5 years now since losing Elizabeth for good. 5 goddamn Lantian years since Rodney had tried to bring her back after she walked through the gate to her demise. 5 years since the rescue failed and she died all over again in Rodney's arms. It never got any easier. If only Elizabeth could see what the city was becoming, how it was growing in purpose and strength, she'd be so proud, and it killed him that she'd never see all their work come to fruition. Usually, John and Rodney grieved together, bonded through loss, holding each other in comfort. But for Elizabeth's loss, it was different somehow. Rodney seemed to get more unbearable each anniversary, digging deep in acerbic tendencies to hide from his own pain and guilt, taking it out on John or anyone else who dared cross his path. At first, John had tried, he really had, to reach out and be there. But at some point, it just got too hard, too much. It was best to allow Rodney space for a few days as he reprocessed everything, convincing himself over and over that somehow it was all his fault. John had nearly finished signing the last page, a notice of 27-hour detention in Ronan's cooling-off cells for an Athosian and a Genii that gone into a physical altercation over a trade agreement, when his office door chimed. This caught John's attention as strange for two reasons. One, no one ever came to his office. In fact, standing orders for his men were to report first to Lorne for military matters or to Ronan for domestic security concerns. This gave John the freedom he needed to be both head of the Lantia military and leader of an off-world team. These two roles were each a full-time job in and of themselves. Second, 2,600 hours wasn't exactly standard operating hours in Lantia's 27-hour day. For a brief moment, John thought of ignoring the chime, but curiosity won out. He mentally unlocked the door and it slid open, revealing yet one more mystery. Miko stood, looking around anywhere but at John, her hands anxiously wrung together, and she bit back her lower lip. Of all the people John might have considered to show up at his office, Miko was definitely not on the list. As one of the original Lantians and a member of McKay's science team, John saw her regularly when visiting Rodney in the labs or at various festivities. She shared a bond with them that could only come from grief and triumph, risking lives day after day. McKay thought highly of her abilities, which spoke volumes in and of itself. Outside of that, however, John had never had a chance to just talk to her, get to know her in any way. He didn't need to know her well, though, to sense something very wrong had brought her here, of all places. How did she even get the idea to look for him in his office? "What can I do for you?" he asked, waving her in. She remained in the doorway, her voice small, almost inaudible. "As you know, Dr. McKay is a brilliant man, and I am very lucky to work with him. I know it is not my place to question him."
"But," John prodded.
At the mention of McKay, his stomach sank. Perhaps Rodney had started his anniversary brooding a day early. He hadn't, after all, attended the nightly teen dinner. "Dr. Zelenka is also brilliant," Miko said. "I have learned so much from him over my years here."
"They truly are the best. So what's the problem?"
"I think you should... It's quite sensitive, you see, and I really shouldn't be here, but..."
"Go on."
"Please, I think you... It is difficult."
"Look, I get you don't want to say anything against them, but I can't help if I don't understand what's wrong."
Well, you see, they are such amazing scientists."
"Yes, we established that.
It's really not my place to question them." "Dr. Kusanagi, I'm assuming you are here because something has happened."
She nodded hesitantly, gazing at the floor. "Are they okay?" A pause. Then she nodded again for a moment before shaking her head no, so slightly he easily could have missed the movement. "Where are they now?"
"In Dr. McKay's lab."
Realizing this was getting him nowhere, John grabbed his jacket and made for the door, gesturing for Miko to follow behind him. Then quickly clicking his headset, he said, "McKay, this is Shepard. Come in."
"What?" came the acerbic reply, but a reply nonetheless.
Thank God.
"We need to talk."
"Not now. Tomorrow."
"Now, McKay."
"Sorry, not available."
The radio clicked, indicating closed connection right as Shepard pressed the button to transport. The moment he arrived on McKay's floor, John could hear Raddick yelling from a distance. Beside him, Miko took a step back, clearly not wanting to follow him any further.
"They've been like this for a while," he asked.
She nodded.
Even from this distance, he had no trouble hearing Rodney. "Back off, Raddick. It's not a problem."
Rodney's shouts came in many modes. He had his, "I'm shouting because I'm really into this debate and this new project is going to turn out so cool" voice, which was the standard for most of his interactions with Zelenka when they disagreed on how best to solve a problem. Then there was his, "I'm seriously pissed off and everyone needs to get the hell away from me" panicky yell. Whenever the latter voice came out, he often needed John to calm him down and help set him right again. Based on the screaming, Rodney was similar to the second mode, but much worse. It felt chilling, raising the hairs on John's neck. He knew something was very, very wrong. Rodney's voice carried aggression, hurt, fury, panic, and an overall danger, danger, danger sounding alarm. At least that explained why Miko had come straight to John. Leaving Miko behind, John bolted forward toward the lab.
"It's complete lunacy. I cannot allow you to make such a monumentally stupid mistake. It's too dangerous, and you know this," Raddick said.
John felt his heart sink as he thought open, only for the lab door to remain closed. Shit. There was a certain benefit to listening in, such as gathering information, though every part of him felt the need to barge in and get answers. He thought of pounding on the door or calling for reinforcements, but his gut told him to wait. Instead, he pulled the cover off the control panel. It was easy enough to get through the doors. He'd seen Rodney do it several times. And meanwhile, he could listen and maybe better understand what he was walking into.
"Listen to me, Rodney. If you refuse to shut this down and leave, I will report this madness to Colonel Shepard."
"Seriously?
You'll tell? That is the most idiotic, childish response. At least maybe he can knock some sense into you." "Don't you dare." "See? You see how that worries you? It's because you know this is wrong, Rodney. You know he would never let you do this."
Although John couldn't see Rodney through the wall, he could imagine him crossing his arms, raising his chin in the air, holding the silence for a moment as he weighed his options.
"Stop interfering," Rodney yelled.
Okay, yeah, something was definitely wrong here. John moved the last crystal and the door slid open just in time to see Rodney push Raddick against the nearest console, blocking the way out with his body, ready to attack again if necessary, fury glinting dangerously in his gaze. Raddick's glasses clattered to the floor, testifying to the intensity of Rodney's shove.
"Whoa, whoa,"
John said, dashing forward between the two and holding his arms out to keep them apart. Rodney immediately switched into wide-eyed panic mode. He took a step back, clearly trying to collect himself. "Okay, I shouldn't have done that," he said. John didn't miss the uncharacteristic whiff of alcohol from Rodney's breath. "Yep, definitely started the brooding early and then came to the lab drunk. Great, that was going to be all kinds of fun to address." John gave an apologetic look as he clicked his headset. "Shepard to security, we have a cool-down situation in McKay's lab." "On my way," Ronan answered immediately. Clearly, the mention of McKay's lab put him in protective mode based on the fact he personally responded despite the late hour. At the mention of cool-down, Ronnie's eyes somehow grew even wider. He knew the new radio codes well enough to realize John was calling for an escort to take him to the cool-down brig for a period of anywhere from 1 hour to 3 full Lantian days. "I'm good now, really," Ronnie said. "Please don't." "You're a mess," John snapped. "Barely. It's not like I'm drunk." "You're at least buzzed, Rodney, and you just attacked Raddick. Think about that for a moment." John reached down, retrieving Raddick's glasses and holding them out. Raddick grabbed them, still looking half frozen and shocked. Then turning his gaze to Raddick without shifting out of position, Shepard ordered, "You want to tell me what the hell's going on here?" "He's been a crazy man for days now. We all tell him it was too dangerous and he refuses to listen." "It's not too..." "I asked Raddick first. I promise you, you'll get a turn to talk later, but for now, you are going to sit down and wait for Ronan. Silently. Do I make myself clear?" Ronnie looked ready to argue, but John gave his best "don't make this worse" expression, so Ronnie slunk down to the floor defeated. John could see his upset and confusion, knowing he'd have to wait it out for a while in another cell sent there by his partner of all people. "Good," John said. "Now, Raddick, go on." "It's difficult to explain." Raddick's demeanor shifted now as he fixed his glasses, watching Rodney carefully. Raddick continued, "I am sorry you were dragged into this, Colonel. We're fine now." "Clearly you're not," John said. Rodney might yell occasionally at the other scientists, but that happened far less often than the rumor mill on Atlantis might lead one to believe. Rodney actually made a decent boss, and while he could hold his own out in the field, he most definitely never physically assaulted his colleagues. He didn't go to the lab after drinking. He also usually listened when Raddick told him something was too dangerous, having learned his lessons so long ago on Duranda. Ronan arrived, quickly taking in the situation before passing Shepard a knowing look. "Anniversary?" Ronan asked. Shepard nodded. "Yeah." "How long are you thinking?" Ronan asked Shepard. "Enough time to clear his head. I'll drop by in the morning to sort it all out. That's assuming Raddick isn't pressing charges." John looked questioningly at Raddick, who shook his head. "No, of course not. A few hours in the brig will hopefully unswell that ludicrous brain of his enough that you can put some sense back into him." John expected to see Rodney angry, to give retorts about how he was right there as the rest talked about him. But instead, he sat there resigned, clearly shocked by his own actions. "Hey, it'll be okay," Ronan assured Rodney, offering him a hand up. He gave a gentle smile, which Rodney did not return. So then Ronan patted him gently on the shoulder, motioning for him to take the lead. After Ronan and Rodney exited, Miko appeared once again, glancing into the doorway while still wringing her hands together. "Tell me about the project," John said, leaning casually against the nearest console, motioning for them to take a seat. Raddick said, "Every year he comes back to this nonsense. He entertains it for a day or two, then acknowledges it's too dangerous and shelves it, only to circle back to it again the next year." "So we just have to wait this out, or..." "I am not sure. He is closer to success and more desperate each passing year. I believe he is nearly ready." "All right, tell me what I'm dealing with." Miko and Raddick exchanged wary glances at first, but then each nodded in agreement. "I suggest you get comfortable, Colonel. It's a long story, and you're not going to like this." Perhaps Rodney was more drunk than he realized, because when they arrived at the cool-down brig, he stumbled in rather than walked. Had it not been for the short distance from the opening to the bed, he likely would have ended up on the floor. "Here," Ronan said, handing him a mug of some strange-smelling concoction that both foamed and steamed from the top. It smelled like a cross between a horse stable and a candy cane, which was all kinds of wrong and quickly set Ronnie's gut roiling. Ronan's hangover cure was actually fairly famous throughout the city. It worked both before a hangover started and after one was roaring at full capacity. In fact, Ronan was full of magical cures he'd learned from Milena on his time on the run. Only many of them smelled and tasted so bad that one often wondered if the cure was worse than the illness. Except usually most people sang the praises of his concoctions and happily took them again and again.
Yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
Drink, Ronan said, towering over him, the force field still not on. It'll help you sober up.
First of all, I'm not drunk. And, Ronnie said, while Ronan raised an eyebrow, I'm not, really.
Drink, I'm not asking. No one here wants to smell your vomit.
Which will only happen if I drink that. Ronan pushed the cup into Ronnie's hand, despite protest, taking a seat on the cot with him. It buckled slightly under both of their weights.
Realizing this wasn't going to go well, no matter what Ronnie did, he took a huge swig of the drink, only to find that despite the smell, it didn't taste awful. Mostly like bitter coffee? Ronnie quickly gulped it down before handing the mug back. The cell quickly spun around him and his body felt like liquid jello.
It'll kick in soon, Ronan assured him, patting his back a bit rougher than Ronnie felt was necessary. He then stood up, walked to the other side of the opening, and activated the blue force field.
Ronnie expected Ronan to leave him to his misery, which now included wondering if his limbs actually worked anymore if they'd always feel like liquid. Instead, Ronan plopped himself down in front of the cell, clearly planning to keep him company.
You want to talk about it? Ronan asked.
No, not really.
I'll just sit here then, in case you change your mind.
That is completely unnecessary, Ronnie protested at first, but then he looked around at the cluster of 20 cells surrounding a central station. It finally hit him that he was indeed in the brig for the night, and suddenly company sounded like a good idea.
But if you want to waste your time sitting there, I'm not going to argue.
Ronan smiled knowingly, making no move to leave.
Ronnie realized that everything felt right side up again, and he could once more wiggle his completely normal toes. People weren't kidding when they said how fast acting this stuff was.
He glanced around, taking in his surroundings. The security guard sat reading a book at the central station. Most of the calls were empty, but Ronnie saw the other two occupants, both asleep or at least pretending to be. Each cell couldn't have been more than 2 meters by 3 meters. It felt cramped, but the wide opening for the force field made it feel less claustrophobic. The setup reminded Ronnie of something out of Star Trek, which he assumed was where Ronan and the other designers got their inspiration. Atlantis was a city full of geeks, after all. Each cell contained 2 metal beds that hung out from the wall, one below and one above. Ronnie hated to think what it would feel like to cram 2 people in the cell. Surprisingly, the bathrooms were the best part of accommodations. The trouble with holding cells used for Wraith and other bad guys of the week was that the toilets came up from the floor in the open space. You had to do your business in front of everyone. Years of off-world adventures helped Ronnie get used to the lack of privacy, but he never failed to be thankful for the occasional privacy wall. Compared to all the times Ronnie had been arrested or kidnapped, this prison felt like absolute luxury. Ronnie focused back on himself and the fact he'd somehow managed to land himself in Ronan's jail, though he had to admit it, now that Ronan's cure had kicked in and he could feel the difference between drunk and sober, he most definitely had been drunk. Of course he had been. It wasn't like he normally went around shoving his colleagues.
Oh, fuck. He tried to work while drunk. He'd pushed Raddick.
John had overheard about the project. Ronnie had been arrested?
Fuck!
Shepard will have your back, Ronan said, clearly sensing Rodney's rising panic.
He's going to be pissed.
He'll be worried. He's always worried. Losing Elizabeth wasn't your fault.
Which part? The one where I turned her into a replicator? Or the one where I watched her space herself? Or the one where I broke all the rules and tried to bring her back, only to fail miserably and kill her all over again? Because that sure sounds as though all of it was pretty much my fault, and I'm sick of people trying to pretend otherwise.
Hey, a voice called from one of the other cells. People are trying to sleep here? Ronnie looked over to see it came from a cell with a Janai hat on the floor. He still couldn't get used to the fact that there were actually Janai living in the city now. If you wanted to sleep, you shouldn't have done whatever stupid thing it was to land you in jail, moron! Ronnie yelled back, fully aware of how much his rant also applied to himself. Ronan made a loud show of clearing his throat, which quickly quieted down any response. Menacing Ronan turned out to be a perfect fit for security chief because few dared to mess with him. Ronnie curled onto the bed, tucking himself in with the thin sheet they called a blanket. He rested his head against the pillow. He'd only meant to close his eyes for a moment, but the next thing he knew, it was morning. He opened his eyes slowly, focusing on the metal bunk above his, and groaned. So much for hoping everything had been a dream. He turned toward the force field, only to see spiky hair and a familiar, worried frown. "Tell me you're here to bust me out." Shepard immediately looked guilty while rubbing his hand through his hair. "Yeah, about that." "What?" Rodney immediately sat up. "Oh my God, you're planning to leave me here, aren't you?" Then when Shepard didn't answer, other than to make his "it's complicated" face, Rodney added, "Seriously? You're really thinking of keeping me in the brig?" "Maybe? Maybe? What does maybe mean? Just for today? Possibly overnight? I came to talk first, see how it goes, and then decide." "Talk? You?" Rodney asked disbelievingly. "Yes, talk, Rodney. In case you haven't noticed, you got yourself arrested." Not my best moment, I'll admit. "How's Radek?" Rodney felt the shame swell within him. What the hell had he been thinking? Oh, right. He hadn't been thinking at all. He'd been drinking. Since when did he drink, much less get drunk anyway? He hadn't really planned to, but then he'd seen the bottle of the 10-year single-grain Scotch whiskey he'd taken from Carson's quarters back when he died. And suddenly Ronnie felt all the loss of so many years ago weighing on him. He didn't think he'd drunk all that much. But then again, it was 100 proof, and Ronnie had always been a lightweight when it came to alcohol. "He's fine. Worried about you." "Miko and Radek blabbed about the project, I assume." "Yes, Rodney, they told me, and I've half the mind to send you to the infirmary to see if your brain is completely broken," Shepard snapped, and Rodney winced in return. John continued, "I can't fathom why else you would think it's a good idea to risk severe brain damage on another ill-conceived scheme to once again save Elizabeth that has a minimal chance of working." Rodney glanced around him. What cells were inhabited earlier were now empty, leaving them alone except for the security guard at the station. Somehow Rodney had slept through the discharges. At least no one could hear him getting chastised. "I'm not discussing this," Rodney said. "Yes, yes, you are." "No, I'm not." Rodney tilted his chin aloft, crossing his hands over his chest in trademark defiance. "That's the way you want it? Fine. I'll come back tonight and see if you're ready to discuss it then." "What?" Ronnie glanced around at the cells and the guard, his half-bathroom and substandard bed. John, of all people, knew better than to leave him in small, confined spaces. "You can't just leave me here?" "Yes, I can, unless you're ready to talk now." "Look," Ronnie answered, making sure to use his best, "I obviously have things under control, voice. There's nothing to say besides what I'm sure Miko and Radek already told you. We started a few years back. It looked promising. The device could probe our brains for data to go back in time, grab Elizabeth from right before her death, and pull her into our timeline where she could live out the rest of her life. It's a good plan. Except for the possible brain damage, which is why Miko and Radek backed out." "It's worth the risk." "No, it's not, Rodney. It most definitely is not." John was breathing heavily now, exuding so much pain and hurt that it hit Rodney like a physical punch. Rodney took a moment to recover before mumbling, "You can't keep prioritizing my life ahead of others." "And you can't keep deprioritizing it. You can't keep finding ways to change the parts of the past you don't like. At some point, you have to just accept how things are. You need to accept that there will be love and loss.
We've defeated the Wraith. Atlantis is a growing metropolis with so many people benefiting from the Alliance. You and I are finally together. John tapped his fingers against his leg in his usual restless way. I miss Elizabeth. I do. I miss Ford and so many others. But if you go back to fix this, then what changes? The Wraith might win? Atlantis falls? What do you go back and change next? Is there even a timeline good enough for you? Ron's words poured out quickly while Ronnie stood frozen, mouth agape. He wished he could block out all the sounds and not understand John's words, because damn it, they made sense. John continued, every year at this time you push us all away, and all it's done is make you hurt that much more. I mean, look at you. You got drunk, you attacked Radic, you're in the brig. And for what? To change the past? To undo our present and the life we made together? This isn't about us. Isn't it? I murdered her. Multiple times even. First when I let her walk through the gate and into space. Later when we got her back to Pegasus. I tried to save her, but then I got caught and then she died anyway. She should be alive. If I have to trade my life for hers, well, isn't that worth the cost? No, I... Well, maybe you don't get to decide that, Ronnie yelled so loudly it surprised him. Maybe I just won't let you out of here. You can't protect me forever, Ronnie said, purposely lowering his voice. He wished his heart would slow down already and his breathing would come easier. He could still hardly believe John had locked him in the cool-down cells in jail. Yes, I can. Please, we both know the protocols. Up to 3 Lantian days maximum in cooldown before pressing charges or putting it on my official record. So I'll have Radic press charges, and we can add drunken disorderly to the list as well. That'll buy us enough time to stop this insanity. John stuffed his hands in his pockets. Ronnie could see right through him how uncomfortable the threat felt, but he could also sense John's determination to see it through if necessary. Still, Ronnie stammered. You wouldn't do that. If it means not losing you, try me. Ronnie began to pace, but his cell was so small he could only get a few steps in any given direction before having to turn on his heel and go the other way. He paced anyway, if only to spite his predicament. Okay, let's think through your completely idiotic plan, shall we? Let's say Radic presses charges and I get hit with drunk and disorderly on my record along with physical assault. Then what? I'll get sent back to Earth or I stay. Maybe I'll even have to step down as head of science. Eventually I'll figure it out anyway. Either way, you'll lose me. Ronnie looked down, lacking the courage to meet John's eyes. And I can tell you, our relationship may be the best thing that ever happened to me and the sex is incredible. But even I have my limits. You try that bullshit and I'm out. If you get sent back to Earth, at least you'd still be alive, John said in an even voice. Yeah, a stranger in a strange land type of alive, because we both know Earth isn't home. John didn't reply right away. He drew a deep breath, his eyes darting back and forth. I'm having Radic figure out if he can destroy the device. You wouldn't. I would. I am. Would you just listen to me, please, John? Ronnie pleaded, coming as close to the force field as he could without getting shocked. Please, don't do this. This is how it has to be. I'm sorry. Desperate, Ronnie quickly worked to come up with a plan. He couldn't let this end here, not after he'd worked so hard. It only took a moment to choose his next move. He knew it was a low blow, but what the hell? He'd already pushed things so far. What was a little more? I'll break up with you. I mean it. I'll take my stuff. I'll move out and all. John didn't hesitate, parrying the blow with a firm reply. But you'd still be alive and your brain intact. And that'd be enough for me. It'd have to be. Ronnie sat back on the bed, having completely forgotten about his surroundings, that he was in the brig, arguing from behind a force field, for John to express so much, to push so hard. He stared at the opening between them, wishing he could fling himself forward and into John's arms.
John would feel him, and then he'd understand, because he always understood Rodney when it mattered. John continued, "If you give us the passwords to your part of the project, then Raddick can finish faster, and you can be out earlier. He could finish before the 3-day hold period ends, saving your career, and hopefully us." "No, there is absolutely no possible way." "Don't make me fight you on this, Rodney. Just give us your passwords and end this."
"No, I can spell it out for you if you're having a hard time hearing. N-O. No, I won't let you destroy my work."
"I order you to."
"Which I disobey?"
"McKay."
"Colonel."
If John wanted to make this formal, then whatever. It wasn't like their relationship could survive this anyway.
"Please."
"I don't.
I can't.
I just need your passwords.
Please."
"No."
Neither of them would budge, Rodney realized. John, raw and scared, stared back at him, lost and unsure, pleading with every part of his being for Rodney to just give in. But Rodney couldn't. He couldn't lose this chance, not after so many years. He'd find a way out before Raddick succeeded. He'd enact this plan before John could stop him. Somehow. John took a step back, casually leaning against the air as though it were a wall. An action that defied all physics and yet seemed to be John's default when desperate to get his emotions hidden away and back under control. "I'm going to check on some things," John said, breaking the silence. Then he quickly made an about-face and rushed out the door before Rodney could call him back.
John didn't come back for the rest of the day. Ronan and Taylor visited, offering food and advice, but Rodney mostly ignored them, sulking. With each passing hour, his cell felt smaller and smaller, his panic growing as he considered Raddick purposely destroying the device. Deep down, he knew John might be right. Yes, he successfully changed 48,000 years of history, or so he'd been told. But that didn't mean he should keep changing the timelines. Rodney got that. He did. Loss would happen. Some realities were worse than others, and with each instance he changed the past, he risked thrusting them into a darker timeline. And did the other realities then cease or continue? Did the Rodney who created John's 48,000-year-old hologram still exist even after John gated back? Did it matter? He could go back, grab Elizabeth right at the moment of her death, and thus keep the timeline from changing. They could have their happy ending and have Elizabeth. But John would never take the risk. Nor would he allow Rodney to try. Rodney curled onto the bed, once more closing his eyes, imagining John's warm arms around him, whispering into his ear that all would be okay. The next morning, Rodney awoke to Ronan waiting with breakfast trays and coffee for the current 3 occupants of the cells, 2 having joined sometime late in the evening while Rodney was sleeping. "You could let me out of here," Rodney suggested. "I won't. We both know Shepard's right." Rodney knew no such thing, but he shrugged and gladly accepted the coffee while picking at the food. "Some friend you are." "Friends help each other, even when they don't think they need help." "So keeping me locked in here is helping me? Really?"
"Yes." Rodney scarfed down the rest of the food, making a point of ignoring Ronan until his teammate headed off to eat his own breakfast. Shepard arrived not too long after, not saying anything, wearing a strange expression Rodney couldn't read. They'd grown so close over the years, Rodney couldn't even remember the last time he couldn't tell what Shepard was thinking. It definitely didn't help Rodney feel any better. Still, maybe Shepard had finally come to his senses?
"Oh, thank God," Rodney said, leaving his empty tray on the bed. "Tell me you're here to let me out now."
"In a manner of speaking, I'm going to need you to turn around and put your hands on your head," Shepard ordered.
"What?" Rodney knew he couldn't have heard correctly, so he replayed the words several times, but they still didn't compute. "I'm sorry, did you just say..."
"You heard me," John said, pulling out a pair of silver handcuffs, standard equipment for the security guards in Ronan's division, not so much for the military head.
"You've got to be kidding me."
"I'm not."
"Seriously?"
"Seriously, turn around and put your hands on your head."
"Oh, I see," you're pissed, and this is how you're going to childishly act out about it? Really? Do it. Is this like a sexy jail thing, then? Rodney asked while following John's directions. Because I could totally get behind that if you want. No, Rodney. It's standard operating procedure for those in custody when moving from one location to another. Where are we going? You'll see. Rodney heard the force field go down. Instantly, John moved in, pulling Rodney's right hand behind his back and into the restraints, followed by the left. Of all the asinine, ridiculous things you could think up to do today, you choose this? Rodney asked. As I said, I'm just following protocol. John grabbed hold of Rodney's arm, leading him across the open area and through the back exit. It took only a moment to make it down an empty corridor to the last room on the left. Swiping his hand over the control panel, the door slid open to reveal a small room with a table and two chairs facing one another. John led him straight to the table. Sit, he said, releasing the left wrist from the cuff, before locking that cuff on the bar bolted down to the table. Unsure what to make of John's actions, Rodney asked in a mocking tone, You sure this isn't a sexy jail thing? It might help us both feel better. I didn't even know we had interrogation rooms. They were part of the cool-down brick construction. Also, Radic needs your passwords. The extra messy hair and black circles under John's eyes testified to just how well he'd slept the night before. Radic didn't manage to destroy the previous device then? Rodney asked. Not yet. That was something, at least. Maybe Radic wouldn't be able to get through, and Rodney would get another chance. Rodney asked, Look, I get you're angry and worried, but this is taking things a bit far, don't you think? I'm not going to lose you and everything we worked for, John said. So you handcuff me to a table? How exactly is that supposed to accomplish anything? Rodney tried to gesticulate wildly, as he always did when nervous, but it was strange with only one hand freely moving and the other tethered. It just didn't have the same effect. I don't know. It makes me feel better, Shepard shrugged, but his voice and facial expression remained monotone and serious. Does it really? So this is about you being mad and acting out. You know, if I ask for a lawyer right now, they'll totally have your head. You won't. No, I won't, but I obviously should. You do have me restrained, and you're not even willing to make it worth my while. I'm not losing you, John said softly, his concern rising to the surface despite a clear effort to remain stoic. You already said that. Well, it bears repeating, doesn't it? You're so ridiculously stubborn sometimes. So are you. Ah, yes. The it takes one to know one defense. How original, Rodney said. This argument is getting old and I'm so done. Can we please just start making out or, I don't know, do just about anything else? Tell me the passwords and then we can make out all you want. Oh, please. You know you left me in the brig all of yesterday. That was cruel. Anyway, this isn't going to work. You can keep me cuffed here all day and I'm not going to help you destroy my work or my last hope of saving Elizabeth. And I would hope our relationship would mean more to you than whatever petty revenge this is. Rodney tugged on one of the cuffs for emphasis. It clattered on the bar, echoing loudly against the metal walls. It's not revenge, Rodney. I'm trying to save you from yourself, which, I might add, I've had to do way too often over the years. As if I haven't had to do the same for you? Exactly how many times have you tried to sacrifice yourself? We're not talking about me, John answered, leaning back in his chair nonchalantly, as if to say, I'm cool and have no feelings. It might have worked on others, but Rodney had long since broken through that facade and would not be fooled. He made a point of rolling his eyes. Well, that's convenient. When do you ever let us talk about you anyway? He tried to cross his arms around his chest, but failed miserably due to the handcuffs, which now dug painfully into his wrist. Damn it! Get these off of me! Once you give me the passwords. I'm not going to do that. Then get comfortable. You're going to be here for a while. Ronnie's hackles now completely raised. He yelled, What the hell is wrong with you? Are you sure you don't need to go to the infirmary and get your head checked? Maybe they can see what turned you into such an asshole today. Or maybe you've always been an asshole and I failed to notice, huh?
Can we please not do this right now? You're the one who put me in the brig and now cuffed me to the damn table. I'm happy to walk out of here any time. Good. Give me your passwords and we can walk out together.
This is so ridiculous. You know what?
Ronnie leaned forward, holding his cuffed wrist as high as the chain would allow, waving it around as the cuff slid up and down the bar, hoping John would see how ridiculous this was. Then he folded his arms on the table, making a show of letting his hands rest.
I'm done. I'm not playing this misguided game of yours. I'm going to just be quiet. I'll sit here, I'll stare at you, and I won't say anything.
Really? You can't even help talking just to describe the fact you're not talking.
Shepard had the audacity to smirk, and it really pissed Rodney off. Defiant, Rodney put on an air of false calm.
I can be silent if I want. I'll just sit here and wait out the whole 3-day thing. It's already, what, halfway done now? There's no way you're going to charge me. We both know it. I'm not giving you any information. I'm simply not talking.
Like you're not talking right now.
You're so infuriating sometimes. Ronnie glared, hoping all his anger and frustration would burn right through Shepard and that stupid grin of his. And you're adorable. The comment seemed so out of left field that Ronnie didn't know how to react at first. He blinked, shook his head for a moment, and then gave a short, almost crazy laugh.
Oh, so we're back to sexy jail time? I already told you, I'm all for it.
John's smirk faltered. Can you please stop propositioning me? We're fighting right now, or haven't you noticed?
Well, excuse me for trying to lighten the mood. We're obviously fighting.
Rodney pointed angrily toward the handcuffs with his free hand.
Just for the record, I'm far more pissed at you than you are at me. I can't believe you're trying to destroy years of my work. You're keeping me from doing the one thing I can do to set things right.
Right for whom? You could end up sending us into the darkest timeline.
That's not going to happen. Not if I grab her right at the time of her last death.
You can't know that, Rodney. It could be Arcturus all over again. You're so sure you won't make a mistake, but then everything goes to hell. You could end up brain dead.
Did you seriously just bring up Duranda again? After all these years? You asshole!
Maybe it was a good thing Roddy's wrist was cuffed to the table because he found himself clenching his fists, the surprising need to punch John rising. He'd never felt that way before, and it scared him some, but fury won out as the stronger emotion. It boiled within him, drowning out the reasonable voice inside that told him to calm down.
Radic says there's a not insignificant risk, John said.
There's always a risk, so how come it's okay for you to sacrifice yourself, but not me, huh? It was the same thing with feeding Wallace to Todd. You'd rather murder someone else than let me die, and it's just so hypocritical.
Oh, and by the way, I'm not going to die. Destroy my brain, or whatever paranoid idea Radic suggested. I know what I'm doing. You're supposed to trust me.
His yelling reached a crescendo as he felt himself tremble.
You're in the brig, Rodney. You don't get to play the trust card. And in case you haven't noticed, you're doing a terrible job of not talking. You do realize that, right? And you're doing a terrible job of being my boyfriend.
He hated the brig. He hated the stupid interrogation room. He hated that John put him here, now daring to bring up old wounds. Well, screw him. He pulled with his wrist, tugging repeatedly on the chain in pure anger and frustration. This wasn't sexy. Never had been, really. It was stupid and ridiculous, and he just wanted to go back to his cell and stop staring into John's penetrating hazel eyes. He loudly ranted about all of this, continuing to pull over and over on the damn chain. If only it would break already.
Rodney, stop!
John reached over, wrapping his hand around Rodney's forearm and holding it firmly in place. Rodney froze, surprised by the horror in John's tone. He followed John's gaze down to his wrist where several angry red marks testified to how hard he'd been pulling. Somehow the cuffs had cut into his skin without Rodney noticing. "I'm going to let go now, and you're going to calm down. Understood?" Rodney nodded, breathing heavily and shocked by his own actions. John slowly released his hold, watching Rodney carefully, as if afraid of another outburst. Embarrassed, Rodney eased his hands back to the table, then began rubbing his wrist. "Take these off." "I can't do that." "Yes, you can. If you cared about us at all, you would end this charade." "If I cared?" John snapped. He didn't shout, but there was no mistaking the tangible anger and hurt in his voice. "I'm not the one threatening to leave. I'm not the one threatening to move out and be done with us. I'm not the one threatening to undo everything we built together as if none of it mattered." "It's not like that." "Yes, it is, Rodney. It's exactly like that. What about everyone else here? Do they get a say at all on whether their lives here matter or are worth it? Whether or not this timeline is good enough? If I grab her right at the moment of her death, it won't..." "You can't know that. You know this, but you're too stubborn to admit it. This isn't just about us, your career, or saving Elizabeth. Even if you weren't my partner, even if I wasn't trying to save your life, even if you were someone else trying to pull this shit, I'd still have you in this interrogation room, cuffed to the table. I'd be desperately trying to stop this madness." John stood up, leaning over the table, seething. "You've convinced yourself that you're the hero here, valiantly risking everything to save a friend. I get that. But you got it all wrong, Rodney. Right now, you're the villain, desperately trying to change the past by risking the lives of everyone here and now." "That's..." "I'm not finished," John shouted. "Turn off your damn ego and listen for once. This isn't the bleak future that the alternate you tried to save. What gives you the right to throw away everything everyone worked so hard to build? Stop this insanity and give me the damn passwords. I'm not fucking around anymore." John slammed his hands on the metal table, the sound reverberating around the room loudly. At first, Rodney jumped, shocked by the outburst. Then he grew still, staring at John, taking in the room and the handcuffs as if for the first time. He reran John's words through his brain, unsure he could process any of them. "Oh, wow. This is actually an interrogation. You're just now figuring that out?" "Yes. I thought you were just messing with me." Ronnie's thoughts stopped, refusing to form. He stared forward, blinking over and over, staring at the restraints. His partner, John, actually saw him as the bad guy in this? That couldn't be right, could it? "Well, at least you managed to stop talking," John said. If anything, John's response made everything worse. Rodney's breath came faster and faster, the room smaller and smaller. He couldn't lose Elizabeth. He couldn't let go of the hope of saving her, not when it was all his fault, not after what they did to her. He couldn't lose John either. It had taken them so long to admit their feelings to one another. Now they were together, embracing their love. He didn't want to lose Atlantis, his home, his family. The city thrived more amazing now than when he'd first arrived so long ago as an awe-inspired traveler with no sense of the thrilling adventures to come. The Lantean community had grown over the years, bringing so many people together, defeating the Wraith, and providing a new path into a hopeful future. Atlantis, as she existed today, answered all of Elizabeth's ideals and dreams. What would she say if she knew Rodney planned to risk it all for her? Would she want him to? No, she wouldn't. "Whoa, Rodney, breathe." He heard John's words, but he couldn't process them. Not right now. Not when everything seemed so tight. He could hear himself hyperventilating, but he couldn't be bothered to stop. The situation presented an impossible choice. Could he really just accept this loss? At some point, the handcuffs must have been removed, because now he was on the floor, curled into himself, as John rubbed his back, talking him through the panic attack. He couldn't. He shouldn't save Elizabeth. All the grief he'd avoided for years, hiding it in his project instead of facing it head on, poured out from within him. "She's gone," he managed to say, horrified to hear the sorrow and defeat in his voice. "She's really gone, and I'm not going to be able to save her." John said something, but Rodney didn't hear the words so much as John's soft tone, wrapping around him like a warm embrace. He laid there for a few minutes, motionless, just concentrating on each breath until they steadied. He felt exhausted and defeated. He reached out for John's hand, holding it within his own, grateful for the warmth. He turned slightly, brushing his lips against John's before pressing firmly, losing himself to the gentle love he felt in their touch. John broke away first. "I can't lose you," John said for maybe the umpteenth time that day. And finally, Rodney understood his words and heard the infinite love behind them. John wrapped his arms around Rodney once more as Rodney leaned back into John's embrace. John continued, "I once promised Elizabeth that I would save you from yourself. I now need your passwords to do that." Could he really just stop trying? All that work and all that hope gone? He needed to save Elizabeth. He needed to not give up. He needed to right those wrongs and somehow make everything okay. No, that wasn't what he needed to do at all. He needed to let go. Only he didn't know how. Did he? Maybe. At least he knew how to start. "I'll give you the passwords." John held Rodney close through the panic attack. He felt guilty pushing Rodney this far that he'd melted so completely. But what else was he supposed to do? Lose everything? Lose Rodney? "I'll give you the passwords," Rodney said. John leaned into the relief even as he felt his lover's palpable hurt. He never should have let Rodney push him away each of the painful anniversaries. And now he needed to repair the damage. What if he couldn't? John tapped his radio towards Radek, and Rodney relayed the information. Then Rodney leaned back into John's arms, resting his head against John's chest, where he stayed for a while. Even as John's legs and back grew tired, he didn't dare disturb Rodney, who cuddled deeply into him, oddly silent. The radio call came in before either of them moved. With Rodney's passwords, Radek and Miko had been successful in shutting down the project. Rodney still didn't move. John could see his blue eyes staring off into the distance, thinking, wondering, struggling to let go. Guilt swarmed within John as he watched Rodney rub the red marks on his wrist. He wanted to apologize, but the words didn't come, and he didn't want to risk starting another argument anyway. The image of Rodney ranting while pulling at the cuffs would be etched in his mind for a long time to come. Rodney must have seen him looking because he pulled his wrist away, out of John's sight. "Do you want to go home now?" John asked. "What do you think?" Rodney answered with a weak attempt at his usual annoyed flair. They walked through the corridor, past the cool-down cells, and into the city. Rodney leaned heavily into John. Once upon a time, they couldn't do this openly. But times had changed. Some ways were for the better, other ways for the worse. Mostly for the better, though. They watched the various people from different worlds trading, talking, and otherwise engaging. In some ways, Atlantis felt nothing like it did in the early days. The city embodied so much more now. It would only continue to grow from here. In other ways, it remained the same. In some areas of the city, the scientists and military personnel from Earth continued to work as they always had. Explorers from another galaxy that had found and created a new home. Rodney slowly came back to himself. It took longer than previous years, but it also seemed different, more filled with honest healing. Some moments were still harder than others, though, as the guilt resurfaced. On those days, someone from his team always seemed to sense his melancholy mood from across the city, and they'd show up to drag him away for games, movies, or silent time on the pier. Rodney felt both coddled and loved. Sometimes Torin would tag along. On one such day, Rodney pulled out the Lego pieces he'd been acquiring over the years, as well as the blueprints he'd created for the Lego City of Atlantis. Torrin's excitement and joy lightened Rodney's heart. As the five of them built the model, they took turns telling Torrin tales of their early years together under Elizabeth. Taylor gave Rodney and John warning looks when they described Elizabeth's terror at John throwing Rodney over a balcony.
"What?" Rodney asked defensively.
Perhaps it would be best not to put such ideas into his head.
"It's not like he has a green shield anyway."
"Rodney," she warned. Rolling his eyes in annoyance, Rodney answered, "Fine. We can skip all the good parts."
"That's not fair. I want to hear the good parts," Torrin chimed in.
John pressed up and down on the ZPM Lego piece, watching it glow on and off. Rodney thought briefly back to when ZPMs were such a mystery to them that they hadn't even figured out they could easily and efficiently be recharged in a lab in the Southeast Pier.
"We were basically living in the Dark Ages," he told Torrin.
"What are the Dark Ages?" Torrin asked.
"Imagine a time," John cut in, "when you didn't even know when the next chocolate supply from Earth would arrive. It was madness. People fighting everywhere, blood and guts all over the floor just to grab the last piece."
"Whoa."
"Uncle John has a unique imagination," Taylor said. "I do not suggest you take his tale at face value."
"It's how I remember it," Ronan said, shrugging.
"Me too," Rodney said. "Not as bad as the Klondike Wars, though. It turned out we would do all kinds of things for a Klondike bar."
As they put the finishing touches on the East Pier by placing minifigures of Ford and Elizabeth looking out, Taylor said, "I have an idea of how we can celebrate her going forward."
"What's that?" John asked.
"We can share her story, not just with Torrin, but with everyone here. The city is full of so many new travelers, each finding hope in the future. We can honor her memory by acknowledging all she did to bring this dream to fruition."
"I'm in," Ronan said without hesitation, and everyone agreed. They moved the completed Lego city to the heart of Atlantis, the gate room. Then above this, they hung a plaque crafted by the team. It bore her picture and name. Below, on tiny wooden boards, they displayed the names of worlds now joined in the Alliance. They left plenty of room to add many more. Below her picture, it read, "All of this was made possible because you led the way." Then around her picture, they hung other frames, pictures of all those who had died in the first years of the expedition before the Wraith fell. There were so many pictures, it made Rodney's heart ache. At least he now knew that their lives were not lost in vain.
"Every year we will gather here and celebrate," Taylor explained to the gathered crowd. "We'll share drinks and regale visitors from afar with stories of her courage and hope, of all she did for us. Atlantis will continue to shine as Elizabeth's legacy. We will ensure her memory and the memories of all those we loved and lost, honored for many years to come." Rodney leaned gently into John, who had his arms wrapped around him. It felt so comforting and right. Together they gazed at the newly hung plaque and the beautiful Lego City. Letting go was never easy, but at last, Rodney felt ready. He glanced around the gate room, bustling with people he never imagined working together, each filled with dreams for the future. Atlantis truly stood as a magnificent city of hope and discovery. Then he gazed at his team. His family lived by the slogan, "Team Forever Together." So many years sharing their lives and their love encompassed so much. It filled Rodney with joy to know they would enjoy many more adventures to come. This timeline wasn't just good enough, he realized, but wonderful, special, and right. Letting go at last, Rodney embraced the here and now. The end.